Okie dokie, welcome to Exploration 1, Module 3 and 4 and stuff. Now, before I get started, how's everybody going with the labs? I've seen one person submit one of the labs, which I've got to look through. And how's everybody finding the labs in Chapter 1? I haven't seen anybody do anything on the TikiWiki site, and I haven't seen anybody do anything with the other messengers, except, of course, for the people that have done these labs last year and don't need to resubmit them. So, how's everybody going with that so far?
Oh, sorry about that. My
Sorry
microphone
about
was
that. My
off.
microphone was off. That doesn't.
I saw a security lab in chapter one. Do we have to do that one as well?
You certainly do. It's there. And yes, it is doable. There's just basically a Google search to find the information that's required. And yeah, everybody who did the course last year filled that one in. Alrighty. Let's see what we got here. Alright, last week we talked about. So, okay, does anybody have any questions about the stuff that I raised last week about layered models and the OSI reference model and all of that interesting stuff? Well, it's interesting if you like that sort of thing. Alrighty, let's talk about a few things. I've made some summary notes on Module 2. And essentially, Module 2 is talking about, which I spoke about most of the stuff last week. It talks about the layered models. It talks about breaking the network specific stuff into various sending and receiving processes. And it talks about how you can change various aspects of the network without changing the entire protocol stack. So, as we spoke last week, you can send the same frames of Ethernet. The frames look the same on Ethernet whether you're sending them on 10 megabit coaxial twisted pair, sorry, coaxial I should say, or twisted pair, or whether you're sending them on gigabit fiber. So the frame format stays the same. This is one of the advantages of a layered model. Does anybody remember the old days of networking with things like LANtastic and Novell, where the protocols and stuff had aspects to them that were actually tied to the media? For example, the network number was derived from the MAC address of the network card. Does anybody remember any of that stuff? Anybody seen any of that stuff? Apparently Ian does. And that was lots of fun. And luckily we don't have to do that anymore. Unless we work for a government department, and then we still do it. There are still some Novell installations out there. Okay, so the network needs three things. It needs a sender, it needs a se- well, it doesn't need them, but it's a good idea to have them. A sender, a receiver, and a medium. A medium is the thing that the packets and messages travel through, and you're basically looking at three broad types of media, I should say, wireless, optical fiber, and copper cables. Depending on what you're doing, depends on what sort of media you're going to use. Now, a message is broken down into smaller pieces, so a large transmission does not monopolize the network. This has become a lot better than it used to. Back in the old days when we were running 10 megabit network across coaxial cable at our TAFE, and somebody decided to play the Betty Boo video, it would monopolize the network to the point that nobody else could actually do anything. So obviously the moral of the story is don't play Betty Boo videos, but in all seriousness, as the bandwidth has increased and the contention has improved. Alrighty, so I was talking about the fact that the frame structure on Ethernet looks the same as whether you are running it on a 10 megabit coaxial connection, or whether you're running it on a gigabit fiber. And I was also talking about the fact that the increase in bandwidth and the quality of service stuff on Ethernet has improved since we were using it in 1995 at TAFE.
Is good.
Okay, now a message on the Ethernet, as I said, is broken into multiple pieces. It is done that way for two reasons. Multiple conversations. So in other words, you can have multiple things talking on the network at once. So you can open six connections to Facebook and log on to MSN Messenger and Skype somebody, etc. And the other one is so that the transmission doesn't monopolize the network. Now, have you ever been in one of those conversations where somebody just talks and 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 you can't get a word in edgeways and eventually your brain melts down? That would be like a network without segmentation.
Sounds like the Cisco.
No, I've never had that happen to me in any conversation I've been in.
Ah, well. This is something that obviously we don't want to have happen on a network because, well, perhaps a lot of the people here would know that if, for example, you are torrenting and you're trying to just talk on Skype and your connection on Skype breaks up, you have to reduce your torrents down to something manageable, otherwise you can't get your Skype packets through because the Skype packets are interested in low delay, high reliability. And the torrent packets aren't really interested in anything else, they're just interested in saturating your link. Problem with segmentation, however, is that segmentation imposes an overhead on network communications. That is to say that by the time you put all the headers and trailers and things on the segment, you actually increase the amount of traffic that you are sending over the network. Depending on the protocol, depends on how much you increase it, by 10%, by 15%, by 20%, it all depends. And one of your labs where you calculate the bandwidth usage, which I'll talk about in a bit, you actually have to take into consideration that overhead. Has everyone read Chapter 2, by the way? All right. Nobody's read Chapter 2. Okay. Eh? So are most things. Hurrah! Alex has. Okay, so if you read Chapter 2, you'll know a lot more about this lecture. So, there. I would really encourage people to read Chapter 2. Services are programs that respond to events and stuff happening on the network. So you have web servers, you have FTP servers, you have DNS servers, you have those sorts of things. And the processors are the things that actually operate on the network and make things happen. Now, this module talks about end devices. These are the devices that you are probably familiar with, or most familiar with, which are also referred to as hosts. So we're talking about PCs, terminals, actually there's a list here, computers, laptops, web servers, etc., network printers, VoIP phones, security cameras, handheld scanners such as wireless sort of barcode scanners and PDAs and things. And these devices are usually identified by an address. Hosts are identified by an address so that you can have them send and receive information. So, for example, obviously if you are dealing with a mobile phone, it say may have Bluetooth on it, and each Bluetooth device has a MAC address. There are usually friendly names that are attached to mobile phones in the Bluetooth specification, but you actually identify each specific device by its MAC address, so the Bluetooth stack basically maps the friendly name to the MAC address of the phone. Services are systems that have software installed that allows them to provide services such as email, web servers, etc. Clients are obviously the machines that access those particular servers. Okay, any questions on end devices? Alrighty. Intermediate devices. They are the devices that sit between the end devices and allow things to happen. So you've got things like hubs, switches and wireless access point. Can anybody tell me the difference between a hub and a switch?
A hub sends data everywhere, whereas a switch sends data to one down one link at a time.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Repeats the message onto all ports, except the one it was received on, and a switch sends it to the recipient of a message only.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah, that'll do. Most of the things you are probably likely to see, unless you're working in a specialized environment, is you are most likely to see switches. So if you look at your integrated services router, it's usually got a 5-port switch, generally speaking, which are 4 ports for you to plug things into, and the 5th switch is usually bridged onto the wireless, and then you connect all of your wireless devices on, and it all works fairly well. You can buy hubs still. However, they are fairly specialized, and due to their lack of segmentation, they are not a good choice for minimizing the contention on networks. You've got other devices such as internetworking devices. So you've got routers, which are responsible for connecting networks together. You've got communication servers and modems, and they're not as prevalent as they once were. But there are still modems out there, and some laptops and things still ship with a modem in them. And you've got security devices like firewalls. Often an integrated services router will integrate a switch, a wireless access point, a firewall, and a router into the one box.
Follow Wilson posted sorted through the Braille things, and we'll take the rest to church, which I hate doing with a passion. Now suffer for me, send the pepper in.
Somebody's transmitting Twitter onto channel.
About 47 minutes ago, Radar and I went for a lovely walk along with my cell and Breeze.
Once I find Jill
using...
Yeah, they're using Jill.
Nice going on a pleasant walk. About 10 minutes ago, Todd's group posted a call every 1 day. Good for you guys.
And
nice
paying great attention to the lecture, it appears.
Yeah, there we go. And you can make your Twitter template faster by shifting the time to the end. That makes it go much faster. Yeah, so rather than going, about a day ago, you can actually have the tweet read, the person's name, the tweet, and then the time at the end. And if you want to know how to do that, well, we won't do it on lecture today. But I find that makes mine go faster.
I think the person in question will miss this on account to not listening to the lecture, which is sad.
This is probably true.
Okie dokie. Now, where was I up to? There was our excitement for the morning. These devices regenerate and retransmit data signals. They maintain information about the pathways that exist through the network, i.e. routing tables and stuff. They notify other devices of errors and communications failures, if they're routers and stuff, and they're configured to do that. And they direct data along alternate pathways when links fail. Now, generally speaking, most people only have one connection to the internet at home, and when that internet connection goes down, it means you get to go out and have a life. I used to have 2 connections to the internet, so when one connection used to go down, I could reroute to the other one, and I could very easily avoid having a life. This was somewhat
enjoyable.
Glad
you fixed that problem.
The routers can also classify and direct messages according to quality of service priorities, and I spoke about those last week. And they can permit or deny the data based on security settings. So when you're choosing media, you need to consider a couple of things. You need to consider how far the signal can travel, like how far the actual link is between the 2 points. Are we dealing with 5 meters? Are we dealing... Okay, no, right. Thank you. The distance the media can successfully carry a signal. So we actually had a situation where we were sitting too close to each other. This was my ex-wife and I. That's not why she's my ex-wife. And we couldn't actually establish our wireless ad hoc network because there was too much signal, which was quite odd. Once we moved the laptops a couple of meters apart, we were actually able to establish a signal. But there are obviously distance limits. Can anybody tell me the distance limit on 10 base T? Or, even 100 base T or 1000 base T?
100 meters.
100 meters or 328 feet. I only provide the other measurement because that's generally what you guys tend to like. The environment that the media is going to be installed in. So if you're running a link between buildings, you probably don't want to use copper cable if there are risks of lightning strikes and things. I mean, you can put copper cable in conduits and put it under the ground and stuff, but it can be a bit tedious to do that. People tend to run fiber between buildings because it has, if you run enough fibers, there's expandability for the future, and it's not as susceptible to electromagnetic interference and other things. So obviously, you'd have to consider that. And you also need to consider the amount of data that you're going to send and the speed at which that data is to be transmitted. You'll tend to find that depending on the distance that the link has to go, if you're dealing with wide area network links, you're usually dealing with lower speeds and often higher latencies on a wide area network than you would be dealing with if you were dealing with more short range links. And the other thing you've got to consider is the cost of the media, both the initial cost of the media when you buy it and the cost of actually getting it installed. And what a lot of people tend to find is that fiber is fairly expensive to install, but the long-term benefits of fiber outweigh the initial expense of installing it. Any questions on any of that? Alrighty. LANs are usually administered by signal organisations and cover a small geographic area. We have a LAN here. It is wired into the rest of the building's infrastructure and goes into a couple of patch panels and stuff, which is all a bit silly because we could probably do our own switching and wouldn't have to pull it out to the comms cabinet, but there you have it. And it's all in a very small geographic area. Our segment is only this room and the little storeroom next door where our server lives and that sort of thing. And a WAN, or depending on who you are, a WAN or a WAN, is a network that is over a longer distance, and often many of the links on a WAN are connected by telecommunications providers. That is to say that you lease data capacity from these providers, and they give you the connections between the geographic points that you need them on. And the internet, well, if you don't know what that is by now, we have a problem. That is the global network of networks that are connected together, and you're using it right now. Alrighty. Any questions on that? Okie dokies. Now, let's see if anybody can tell me the layers of the OSI reference model, and we will get a few from a couple of different people. So, does anybody want to give me the bottom two layers of the OSI reference model? You got to know these guys.
Physical and data.
Yes. Okay, anybody know the next two? Please do not throw sausage pizza away.
Network and session.
No. Unless some throw starts with an S.
Transport, sorry. It's too early in the morning.
Okie dokie. Anybody else know what the last three layers of the OSI reference model are? And I'll give you a clue. The first one's session.
Well, I know the next one's session.
Well done, Drew. Thank you. I got three of them. Yes.
That's one more than anyone else.
Okay, Drew, calm down. So, we have presentation and application. All right, and we spoke about how the traffic travels from the top of the model down through all the layers, down to the physical layer, and how it travels through the reversed version of the layers as it gets to the other side of the communications channel. Now, what you tend to find is that when you read the notes for this course, especially when you look at chapters 3 and onwards, they cover a particular aspect of the OSI reference model in some detail. A lot of people, when they look at a network, they basically look at it as a black box. Stuff goes in and weird things happen to the stuff, and then it gets to the other side and the network is working. Now, provided that you are not responsible for fixing the network, this is a, you know, it's a reasonable way of looking at how a network works. However, this course is designed to allow you to understand the network in more detail, and it allows you to make really impressive statements like, I think we have a transport layer issue. However, it helps to be able to actually back that up with actually knowing what you're talking about. Otherwise, you look like a complete dill when it turns out to be a physical layer problem. We had an incident a couple of years ago where someone who will remain unnamed was having trouble with their internet service and had been having various outages and things for a couple of days, and was just gearing up to ring up the internet service provider and abuse them. However, they discovered that their router wasn't plugged in. Luckily, this was discovered before the call was to be made, and the story ended happily. My advice to everybody, if you are fixing networks and things, is check the obvious stuff first. Sorry, was somebody going to say something?
Yeah, I said, was it you?
No, it wasn't. Alrighty. Now, essential... Alrighty. Can anybody tell me what is the most common... Bless you, Grace. That's 3 sneezes. 7 more to go. Can anybody tell me the most common protocol in use on data networks today? The most common protocol suite.
TCP.
6 to go. You are correct, Brian, TCP/IP. And it was a protocol that was actually standardized prior to the OSI reference model by the Department of Defense, and all of those, or DARPA and all those research people sat down.
Al Gore.
And they tell him, Al Gore? No, he was just interested in networking polar bears together. It was called ICENET. The networks were designed 5 to go to resist a nuclear attack, or at least that was the theory. They wanted multiple paths for data to travel over the internet. They wanted redundancy, and they wanted communications to be still intact to a degree, even if nuclear stuff went down. Obviously, there are 4 layers in the TCP/IP reference model. Can anybody tell me what they are? And I did actually tell you all last week. And there is actually a test question in these. In the final, you've got to mark them all, if I remember correctly. Anybody know the bottom layer of the TCP/IP reference model?
I have no idea, I'm sorry.
True. No, it's not the data link.
Is it network access?
Yay! Network access.
Oh, that's right, the TCP crap. I was trying to be funny. I just ruined myself.
That's wrong on both. That's wrong too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're wrong anyway.
Yes.
Okay. The bottom layer is the network access layer. Does anybody know what the next layer is of the TCP IP reference model? Don't
internet?
All speak at once. Yay! It's internet. All that sneezing must have fired up some neurons.
Shut up.
No, actually, yeah, it's a network layer, actually, Grace. It's not actually called the internet layer. It's the network access and the network layer. And then the one above that. Anybody know the one above that?
I do. Transport?
Yay.
Application's the top one, right?
Yes, it is.